bit about your personal background, where you were born and when?
I was born in April 7th, 1918, Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada.
And what was your father's occupation?
The occupation would be run the store in the corner of Isabel and Norday.
Just a grocery store. And a bit about your education.
Education was 6 years in Wellington School, plus 3 years in General Wall. I don't know, went up to grade 9.
And did you work before World War II? Were you employed?
I was working employed as a truck driver.
With what company?
Not a company, it's a privately owned affair. What I used to do, we used to go around and do lawnmowers, repair shop for different personnel, like for the RCMP and golf courses and so on and on. And I was getting $3 a day for doing that during the Depression years, so it was pretty big money.
And were you in the militia before World War II?
No, I wasn't.
Okay. When did you enlist?
To tell the truth, I gotta go back a few months back prior to that. See, I belong to the 1st Battalion of the Royal Winnipeg Rifles, where they're called the Black Devils. And they were stationed in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. And in July 1941, we came home on the vacation leave before we were supposed to go to England. And when I was down there, after we vacation leave, it was exhausted, went back to Deburg, and I got an operation done on the appendix. So after I came out of the hospital for 2 weeks, I was sent back home with 30 days rest. At the meantime, the big grenadiers had come back from Jamaica. And if the deer arrived from here from Jamaica, after the war, they had reborn. And out of that, roughly, I said they lost only over 300 men. And what happened after that, they went to different units. Because they had begun the battalion up from 600 to 1,400 men short. So they went to the rifles, they went to the cameras, they went to different units. Until they make up 987 people. Actually, I didn't volunteer for the Grenadiers. I was asked by the governor. So I was transferred on 23rd October 1941. On October 25th, 1941, 2 days later.
This was to Hong Kong?
To Hong Kong.
Can you tell me a bit about going to Vancouver? You went on the train, I guess?
We went to the train to Vancouver from here, which was packed full. There was no freedom. Every time you got off the train for a few minutes, you were pretty well underguarded. We arrived in Calgary. We had a short route march, more or less stretch our legs out, which would take about a mile or two, back to the train, continue to Vancouver. We arrived to Vancouver, got off the train, we were marched direct to the boat. We well got it, going to the boat. And we got to the boat, and when we were all on board, a few hours later, the boat pulled away from the harbor, about 6 miles out, make sure nobody jump out. Back. Next morning, they come in, pick up whatever necessary supplies, so on and on, where we went. And we arrived from there on November the 2nd, we arrived in Hawaii, Honolulu. We were there from 1:30 to about 4:30. Never got off the boat, mind you, but we were getting supplies. We were being entertained by hula hula girls and so on and on, and the boys were throwing money and cigarettes and so on and on. And if we continue on from there, destination unknown, and November the 16th, 1941, we finally arrived to the point which was Hong Kong.
Did they let you know anywhere between Honolulu and Hong Kong that you were going to Hong Kong?
To a brother, for somebody else knew, I didn't know. I didn't know where I was. I knew I was in Honolulu, I knew I was in Manila, but still I didn't know where I was going. But we had more or less an idea. I still wasn't certain we were going to Hong Kong. But we arrived in Hong Kong in a way, and Hong Kong is a hot place. We get off the boat, kids who were pulling trucks. And I was looking for trucks for the myself. It wasn't trucks available for us, just for the kids. We marched from the boat to Kaloon camp. It was a garrison, what they called Kaloon. Different huts. They weren't much. They were holding about 50 men to a hut. They were built with cement floors, windows, a lot of old beds, full bed bags. First thing we had to do before we even use them, we had to take them outside and shake them with coal oil to kind of eliminate the bed bags. So after that, we went on. I got a job as a company runner, the C Company, which I used to belong to C Company. Major Bailey was the C Company commander. And I was more or less responsible for running to our different office, not just to ourselves, to our own lines, but to the lines across the way, where there were rifle or Canada from Quebec. So when we were going back, the hours were good. From 9 to about 3:30, because the afternoon gets about 120 degrees. You don't work after 2:30. If you do go out, you gotta have a special headgear. We broke off 4:30, and everybody naturally headed to the nightlife, which was very few, 4 miles away. Most of the place I went was the downtown nightclub, which supply much entertainment. Girls, of course, in our age, we were looking for it. There was lots of them there. And it was food, liquor, and our money went a long ways. Because the exchange was $100 to 360 of theirs. In other words, if you had $100 carrying money, you got 260 yen. And if you had $1, you got a 7-shot of rye, plus dime change, or 7 bottles of beer, plus dime change. And you get rickshaw back and forth to camp, which cost you about 20 or 30 cents as their money. To ours, would be more than 10, 11 cents.
Was there any training done in Hong Kong before the actual battle started?
I told you what happened there was a little place we had done, which I participated in very little because being a company runner and had much to do with it. The only thing my job was finding any men. I get orders to go out in the press square and pick up 6 men to report so and so. There's some work to be done, and that's what I was doing. But we did go up the hill for a week. What I meant, from the hill, from left Kowloon, you're going to Hong Kong. But see, Hong Kong, as you know, is an island. You had to go by ferry. We went up there, it's all hills, mountains, up and down, up and down. We're standing to 25 miles in diameter. No matter which way you walk, you end up in the water. You wish to have a ferry to get across back to Kowloon. And then went on like that. We had a week up in the hills. We come down and got paid. First time I got paid, 2 months. That was the last time for 4 years after that. And like I say, I money went a long ways. You could go downtown for $2-3, you have a night of your life, which right now will cost you about $150 here. Because $2, you get 14 bottles of beer. And if you want to go to a dance, you buy $1 of tickets, which will give you 10 tickets. And each time you dance with a girl, you get 1 ticket. Now, from there, meals, you can get up for 50 cents. They're living. A person retiring there at them days with $50 who have a maid, anything they want. As a matter of fact, there was even a clause there. If you were there, if you didn't want to remain in camp, you could have went downtown and pick up a girl and bring in camp, have her going through the procedure to see the doctor, everything, make sure everything was fine. And you go out and leave in the room was sweet, as kind of low white. They want $15 a month. Which most of the girls got from England, they were doing so because they were there 2 years prior. They knew the city, they knew the mountains, they knew everything. They were a good, smart woman, soldier, and very disciplined.
Now the battle, where were you when the actual battle started?
The battle, we were just coming on the 7th. of December 1941. We were just about to leave camp to go out another day, night, if you would like. But that wasn't the case. They had orders to stop everybody going out the gate. Anybody was out the gate to report back to base. So everybody went up to RQGM store there, pick up ammunition, rifle, and where we went. And different, we were like, say, about 987. In the meantime, was still in the hospital. Well, the one in the hospital that remained there for the time being, but the rest went, some of them went in Kalum, some of them went Dance Hill, Mount Cameron, Dance Hill, and different, they had a hill, hill had a name for it. Me and the company, actually the platoon I belonged to, 13th platoon, we were allocated to Aberdeen Island, which is not an island to cross from Hong Kong into Aberdeen. Aberdeen is just a small, about half a mile. You can look around, look down and see what all around. We were there about 35 men. And we held there from the 7th to the 19th December, inclusive. On the morning of the 20th, we were informed to leave the place, the Aberdeen Isle, and report to One Shy Gap to relieve the company, because the company had been fighting all morning, for 2-3 hours, they had heavy casualties. So we went there, and Lieutenant Nugent was an officer in command, lieutenant. And we met some guys coming back from the place to report to the first aid station, and they asked us where we were going. Says, whatever you do, don't go in there because it's suicide. There's no way you can stop them. So we, nevertheless, we had the orders to go, so we kept her off. And every time we come to an open, Jackson would see us in the shell. So what we do when we come to an open one by one, you know, we can't go back to platoons or sections, but one by one, you know, if he gets hit, one guy gets hit, another dozen or so. So nevertheless, we got through without any casualties. We went out there, and we went there, we got there about 11 o'clock. We take our position, I was a grand gunner myself. My number two grand gunner was named by the name Symes, Stanley Symes. He's the working there, Large Hospital today. And we stayed there from 11 to about 1. There's no way you can keep them back. The more you cut down, the more they come. They will come by the thousands. And don't forget, they will come by the company against a few thousands. There's no way you can stop them. Another thing we had to take into consideration, we didn't have nothing to fight with. We had a brand gunner, which I was specialized in brand gunner myself, not from the Grenadiers, from the work of exposure until that started my study. And I was real specialized in brand. And but like I say, brand gunner without an ammunition is number 21. So the ammunition was getting short. We didn't have no planes, no navy. We had the navy, sure, 4 or 5 boats, British boats, but there was a couple within a few hours. They were attacked, or the Japs would get them. They got them anyway, but they had to work for it after a while. And they would keep it up. About 11 o'clock, and at 11 o'clock, we were having losing people, one after the other. See, I was trained when the fire bred, never to fire more than 1, 2, or 3 mags, magazine, was 22 rounds. Whole story, my own, before 28, then it's just better. So they won't jab. If you put it dirty, she would jam and say, and you have a problem. Well, you put it 28, it works nicely. But by the 2 hours, we were getting very short of ammunition. We were getting short of men, so we evacuate. And from there, the next day, we end up in Benz Hill. And we work in Benz Hill from the 20th to 21st, or up to the 25th, on and off. We chase the Japs away during the day. They come and chase us away at night. And that goes on for 3 or 4 days. And there was no food supply, no water supply. There's no water for 4 days. He used to send 2 men for food They had to go about 2-3 miles to go to that. So what happened? Go to get it, eat whatever they want, dump the rest, and never show up, never come back. We had a lowest of 1 tin of bully beef, which was only 12 ounces for the session. And the session is 13 men, including the NCO in charge. You only got a teaspoon for them. And believe me, no sleep. You wake up late at night, and you fight during the day, you run around back to the hills. Night kind of chase you away, and 3 or 4 hours in a row, was no sleep whatsoever. As a matter of fact, by the 25th, I didn't care if you live or die. There's no food, no water, no sleep, this is not very far. But nevertheless, the water supply was cut off. First thing there, the Japs had done, they blew the water supply up. And I remember, around 4 o'clock on Christmas Day, we had orders to surrender for the simple reason that this order came from the General Young, was the time, from Hong Kong, to surrender because if they do a lake of war, the people were dying by the thousands. So we surrender, Thai, I would say about 4:30. And by the time you get around to everyone, because we were scared, within 5 miles. And part of my company was still fighting after 5:30. When they were fighting, they were shelling us. And we wished to already surrender for an hour. But it made no difference to them. You gotta have them all. But we surrender right in Aberdeen, ourselves. It's supposed to be a hospital. So finally, by 5:30 o'clock, you got everybody convinced it was a surrender. And everything quiet down. The crossroads stuff was destroyed. Any armor nation we had was destroyed. Dumps were blew up. All the rifles were damaged, so they couldn't use them again. A burn gun, they could have had, the cylinder was found. So without that, they can't use it. You gotta have a bitch in there to operate, without the bitch doesn't work. So they could have all the piles all over the place. And the next day, the night time, everybody celebrated because there was a lot of liquor in there. But it wasn't food, it was liquor. And the next morning, we get up every March in platoons, companies, and so on and on. We were marching that road, which going uphill to Washi Gap, and the Jeffs were walking the sides in the mountains. And when they got up there, we'd be about 3 or 4 miles march uphill. The Japs close in. So this church just they had rifles here turning it up, but if you had a real knife running it up, they never bothered with it. And we sat there all from 11 o'clock right through to about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. No food coming, no water, still no water. So finally a truck showed up. British truck. Didn't know we had it. We surrendered, but they, nevertheless, the Japs got hold of it. And they were told to go and get some water. But that truck was used for gas. And what he done, he went down there, reservoir, he got the water pump in the thing without the rinsing it out. So when they come back, he put half the gas and half the water. He was scared to light cigarettes because he might blow up. Then we march one night. We end up inside of a room, Roberto told you that because it was the same bunch. It was 110 of us to a room, but it was 2 rooms, or they were no bigger than this room. 2 rooms together. And a woman having a baby at the same time. So we stayed up till about 7 o'clock in the morning. And we walk and walk and walk. Finally, we coming up to the point towards, I think it was an old school or something. It wasn't. Water tap there, water. And every matter we had broken, every dashboard, the first water was here for a while. We stood there, it took about 40, you know, we did by companies. And finally, the Japs, the major, we had a major belly with us in this particular group. It was only about 30 of us in this group. The Japs were asked how many planes were up in the hills. Well, since we came, less than 1,000. Plus 1,000 worldwide from Canada. Says it couldn't be, says it must be, it had to be a lot more because for the casualty we had, he says, it's understandable. He says, you haven't got no planes, nothing, we had planes and everything. He says, we lost a lot of men in comparison. says, if you find anything else up there, say we did, but all the life wants to hold on here. So we marched 4 days anyway in the row. Destination unknown, but finally end up in North Pond Camp. That's where we kept for 6 months or more.
What was the daily life like in North Pond Camp?
Daily life started off in the morning, but that was about 6:30. We had a wash, we had to line up the wash, we had a little washroom, maybe had 1,000 men in there. Washroom, a few taps there, and I think it was 2 showers. Pretty square, and wood huts, you know, wooden beds. Somebody slept in the cement floor because it was not the wood beds to everybody. And you line up there about 7:30 and 8, what they call breakfast. Dog gets better. A little bit of rice. Sometimes a little bit of soup, hot or salt, because they offer short of salt, which has to be sauce, so they weren't going to give it to us. And that went on and on like that for a period of time. Then
was there much sickness at this time?
In Kowloon, the North Point wasn't much. It was rushing the right from the beginning. Then they came up with this volunteer working parties. In other words, if you want to go, okay, if you don't want to go, that's okay with them. So people were asked to get out. They would be out again for 6 months, everybody. And so they took a working party of about 450 people because they still didn't trust us. And they were well guarded. I think it was putting a 1 for 2. They went out there, the people that went out there, they got 4 buns during time, you know, this, like cinnamon bun. Of course, they want cinnamon. 4 of them, that was their dinner. And they come back home about 6-7 o'clock, and they had a bit of this rice and a bit of soup. They were lucky. That was the end of the day for them, and tomorrow they do the same all over again. And then they decide they go from there, we go back to Kowloon. That's the original place where we landed when we first got there. But when we went to see them hospital or bed, and when we got there, and when we went back for the second time, they were worse. There was no windows left, no window frames, no doors, nothing. Chinese took everything away. So they were inside of barns, no beds, nothing. So we went ahead, 110 minutes to each hop. We had that much room, wooden space. And they went on. The food didn't prove any.
It was still about 3 bowls of rice a day, wasn't it?
No, it was the 3 bowls, you can kind of bowls, this was about a cup bowl, you know, a little bit of soup. And that was only twice a day for a while, and then they give you a cup of tea at about 1 or 2 o'clock. This tea they made out of burnt rice, you know, from tea proper, but from burnt rice. Like when they make the rice, they burn it all around, you know, they boil that and make tea. That's what they call it, you know, dishwater. But nevertheless, I was glad to get it. And then went on, then they decided they're going to have a working party from there. This working party took place at the airport. They would go on the airfield, they wanted to enlarge it. There was a mountain there that was about 100 feet high and about 100 feet in diameter, by a shovel full, a little cart, you know. And I figured if I had to be that long to level that off, I'd be about 300 years old, the way they were working. That was not volunteer base anymore. That was compulsory. And you get up from 2 to 4 o'clock in the morning, you get up every morning that time. By 5 o'clock, I thought you had a little bit of rice. And you get on the ferry, you walk about half a mile, and the end of the camp, it will be a ferry waiting there for you. Everybody on board, get up the ferry and walk about another 3 or 4 miles. Well, we got to work about 7:30 and 8 o'clock. We worked till 5. Now, we never got back to camp till about 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. When they got to camp, we had to line up, this way called east. So this is the east, you make bread. Everybody got nuts. That's supposed to keep the bearberry away from you, you know, where bearberry are, about swallow, legs, and hot feet. And then when the sickness started, they started badly. Bearberry start coming in wet and dry. The wet swell up like a balloon. You weigh 100 pounds, when you got there, you look like you weigh 200 pounds. That swelled up, it's all water. The other ones was hot bearberry. They got what they call hot feet there. only way they can get relief is to walk runs in the night back to Fort Smith, Fort Smith. Otherwise, one have to get a bucket of water and put both feet in there. Keep cold. Looks like we're cold, much no pain. As soon as they take it off, it'd be a pain. And then there was diphtheria, diarrhea, dysentery, you name it, they were getting it.
Was there much medicine at this time?
There was no medicine whatsoever. It was some stuff which we used to use when we first joined the army. It's a sort of all green form, just like powder. But once you put it in water, it became sort of pinkish. But something is good for hardening your feet. You know, the army boots you wear from civilian life, army boots, the army boots wear twice as much. And being a boot, you know, if you have any trouble with your blistering, you soak that stuff at night, that's supposed to harden your feet. That became good for that. That became good for eye wash, goggle, your neighbors. One wonder drug, I call it. That's what good for everything. When this diphtheria broke in, they were going about 5 or 6 every day. And no way of stopping it. Then finally, it was this, I don't know if it was Major Brigadier from England, which he has been there for a long time. And he had a lot of connection and money. So he has some place downtown, which he's spent about roughly what I hear. I had no witnesses and see it. On $25,000 with a Syrian for ingestion. So the organ ingest, and that was the end. Very, very well. By that time, we lost a lot of men. It's a bit too late. It would have been the month before, we would have lost half the men. See, most of our men, they died from starvation, not from battle. Battle, we all lost 120 men. The rest of us lost starvation, complete starvation. It's treatment. It worked. So finally, when I got a little bit of wise to it, they come up. And everyone take mechanical, of course. So I figure, better than going to work at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'll put my hand up. So it used to be a church one time, but it turned up to a school. It was about 30, 35 people at 10. Course start from 8 till 12, break off an hour, have your lunch, go back from 1 to like just going to school. I went about 3 months, 4 months, I didn't mind a bit. I was getting the same ration, people were going to work, they were staying in it. But then they come to the part to the starting the engine. Well, them trucks out there, they don't burn during the war gas or anything like that. They gotta be charcoal burners. Mm-hmm. You have to build up the pressure. Well, I had no knowledge of it. Sure, I had a few lectures on that. But when they come to do it, it was two different things. Well, after watching 3 of us decide to start, I don't think I never got more than 5 miles an hour. That was why it opened. I said, every time I brought up a little steam, I was preventing enough steam off. So they come up with the idea, they quit the working party, draft to Japan. This was the rumor come up in December. At that time, we did receive $10 from the British Red Cross in cash. Each person was a particular camp had $10 in cash. You could have bought cigarettes or tin goods from the because had a net in the corner, you couldn't still buy that stuff. So perfect boys buy cigarettes and different little things. Then on the January 26th, 1943, we took off 500 of us between 500 and 600 of us to Japan. It's still a destination to know. We got on the boat, where we go. In the boat, they take us as sardines. I end up on the steps, 6 steps to the next flight. And there was about 60 of us. We had that much room. There used to be a living room, sitting room, and bedroom. So they got to Nagasaki, which they finished 3 nights. We got to Nagasaki, that was the best part of all. We finally got sunshine. We couldn't see, we never see if it was rain or pour or snow for 3 days because we were underwater there. So when they got there, an hour later, we had to wait there. I was waiting for them. I presume it was a train, which it was after. They gave us 6 bun. Oh, the bun was that big. 6 of them in a row. I thought, geez, it wasn't bad at all. Plus cigarettes. I think it was 10, 12 pack cigarettes apiece in a small package. So I wasn't worried about cigarettes. I had a few. But the band size, we didn't, I need one, I had to hold six, and I had a lot of friends with me because everybody's. So we got on the train that night. Next morning we got up, looked for breakfast. No breakfast. I talk a bit on short breakfast, but we don't have two meals, supper. No supper. And finally, somebody asked me, comes, we're getting to eat. Says, you were issued 6 months in Nagasaki. That's supposed to last you 2 days. I told him, we weren't aware of that. They were given to us to eat at the time. No, he says, you're supposed to last 2 days. And that's what he took from Nagasaki, Kobe, so on and on, to get to between Yokohama and Tokyo, where we ended up this camp. They call it 3D. We got there, they gave us 4 days off. Still rice 3 times a day then. And
food was still about the same, was it? The food was still about the same?
The same. But I think it was a little more. A little more, some difference. So we started on the third day, they took us to show us the place where we were going to work. It was about a mile away from the hut to the place where we worked, about a mile. Of a shipyard where they're building the small boats and freighters. So we went to work and they divided us by six. First they asked what trade you had and you're sitting in life. Well, this guy says I was a painter. And actually there goes the painting job. So they got approved for painting. Well, you're a driller? Yeah, you're drilling this. Come to me, you know. Says, what can you do? Tomorrow, nothing. Let's see what happened to the other guys. Oh, it says, you've been the drill gang. The women by drilling, see, they build a boat. First they put the ribs up and put things. And my job was to, if they put the bolts on, if the bolts, they're not fit, possibly that better, they put bolts. But nevertheless, you still go over there and get a ribbon. The way you do a ribbon, you straighten the hole up, and take the bolt off, and put another bolt there and tighten it. You tie the custom riveter, come behind you. Rivet together.
So you were actually putting rivets.
We were getting the stock ready for the rivet behind us. It was our men were doing the rivet.
Yeah.
We were doing that. So that one I thought, and the time goes by, and I figured Saturday came, no day off. Sunday was no day off. And the first, 20 days went by. And it goes the off at 20 once a month. We found out that later was once a month. That day you head off, you've been better off at work because they get you up about 5:30. Oh, you're supposed to do this, clean your bed, and the bed was on a straw mat. Take your blanket out, some only had 1 or 2 blankets. You're going to do this, clean the prayer square, and the prayer square was 6 times bigger than this room. Pick up paper, was no paper, there was this paper anywhere. But staying in the middle of us, we'll give your hair a cut, or you got to have a name on space, your own MO, you know. Anything to fill around. That was from about 6 to about 10 per night. We had to go back to work the next morning. And when left that, I worked there about 3 or 4 months. They made me a foreman. See, a worker, you get 10 cents a day from them. A foreman get 30 bucks a day. So I started getting 30 bucks a day and I had 5 men under me for riveting. Of course, I didn't make them work too hard. I watched for the guards. But no guys are out, they just stand still. If it was a guard to the steering wheel in a few feet, or they don't care if the guys look busy. And now when I'm on, from 43 right to left, April 44. In the meantime, they were bombing. They bombed steady. From the sea, they had a small plane. Yeah. From the carriers, they were coming back and forth. And every time the alert went, we were out to camp. The old carrier was, we had to go back to work. That was on about 4 times a day. By the time we had guys, we hardly walk. Well, you still had to go over because you had a party of 200 and you had to have 200 men. That's how they stood. Then you had to take one out from the hospital room and the special take them out there. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to change the figure. You want 200 men, that's all you're going to get. You take guys from the special, you put it out there and sit with them all day, and you take them back home at night, but you still had 200. So in the end, when there was nothing left, only was left, then there was our huts, where we, our quarters was like a snatch hut. Right rifle here, running gears here, here's the washroom, the basins outside. So we got to split up. Me and Bert still got together again. Where they took us north. They put us in the train, we're down the line, so you couldn't see where you're going. No, there's a difference because it was, we had no knowledge where we're going anyway. You have to look at it. We got there next morning. We have to, I figured out it was about 200 miles north from Tokyo after it. And we walked 4 miles from the station to this coal mine. I don't know what it's going to be called, but it must have been was. So we got there right away. It's just given out, we were given out some working clothes, you know, which is giving you a top coat and a pair of pants. The first pair, second pair of hair in 2 years. I had more patch. It was original collar, or whatever the collar had, you name it, they had the collars off. So we went on and there we got in camp, line up. Of course, that was line up. That was part of their big day, you know, line up. They line up 4 ranks, we line up in 3 ranks here, but there's 4 ranks. Okay, take all your clothes off. And it wasn't cold, but it wasn't around 25 above. So I stripped right off. It took me 4 years to get a pair of pajamas bottoms from Red Cross, you know. And I was going to give it up. So, okay, give a lot of clothes away, and it was a pair of their clothes, working clothes, which was sack, dyeing green. And I'll tell you why, because the first rain we had, we were caught in the rain, we all turned about to look like the little green giants. Oh, the wind come off. So I went on from there, and I told them I'm going to give us pajamas up, you know. And so when they weren't looking, I put them clothes they already gave me on top of my pajamas. I told them I put one over them. But that wasn't the case. I was not lucky because every camp I went to, I was there more. The most I ever was there was 4 hours without being punished. For something I'd done, I didn't do a minimal difference. Even if Captain Reed was IMO there, his friend says, you got more luck, I don't know how you do it. But every captain who goes, he's the first one to line up to get punished. Well, that's where it works out. So, after a while, we close the rank. I'm like, oh my God, I get my pajamas now. We close the rank. Then another guy, okay, everybody dropped their trousers. So there we go, and then open the rank. So both of the sun. There are 3 of us. I wasn't the only one had to get smoke. And yes, I said, okay, you fall out. You and you. So we fall out. We lost our pajamas, which that was bad enough. But we got punished for it. Besides that. And the correct punishment was the first time I was going to use my death. The pajamas I was worried about. So they took everything away. We were standing there with our little green suit. And they had I had 2 blankets. I had them right from the beginning. One red, one white. Was American blankets. And they were warm. And I kept them. So they took all the clothes away and they threw one big hut and shut the doors. So, like I said, we just ended up there with just where we got off. So we tried to explain to them by the time we had to linger a little bit, we knew how to get by anyway. Oh, it says you'll be given the clothes at the future date. So, yeah, next afternoon they have a sports afternoon. Everybody got a volunteer base, it's compulsory, everybody got to take part in the bigger sports. They made a circle, about 20 feet in diameter. It was a circle, and then you got 150 pounds to carry. The one who carried the longest, 10 bags of rats. Second, 5 bags of rats. Third, but they weren't doing for health. They were doing a super kind of shape for it. So me and Bert and 4 or 2 others, we done 10, 11 tons, so we got 10 bags of rats. Some of us done 5, some 2, some 1, some none. Okay, fine. All the guys done 10 times all over here. Give me cigarettes. All the tickets. There was no name used, all time numbers. So I take the numbers. So one of the scheme was, the guy, if he done the most times, get up in the line below, as far as you can go. 5 times, top, another level up. three times another level up, and the guys couldn't do it all. They work outside on top. So they work four men to a shift, five men to a group, and the Japanese in charge. And they were hitting our boys left and right. And we report to the camp commandant. Oh, I'll look into it. I'm in the Japanese camp commandant. I'll look into it, but he never went near the place. Next night was the same thing. The next night was the same thing. Next we reported the same, but like I said, we look into it. That's as far as we went. So one night I went down there, but though 9 o'clock they were carrying one guy out there. So who was the night? One of our boys? Says, no. Just one of the Japs. Just one of our boys just cut them. Just with a shovel. 5 minutes later was another one. We started hitting back. See? That's where he got a punch. Cut that Russian in half. And stop us. Every time they hit us, we plug them right back. So the Japs said, listen, we ain't going to work with you guys anymore. She says, you're going to work on your own, we're going to work on our own. And Thomas said, that's just fine. So the other way, they make a foreman. I made a foreman again. I had 2 Canadians, 2 British social workers for me. You're coming down, you got 2 shifts on the clock. You work with the boat. One ship, heaven ship, heaven ship. So we go down there. Well, first, you go through where you get the lantern so you can see where you're going. Fine. 2 girls down there. And it was hot. No condition, no air, nothing. A little hot. Then you go down there about 100 feet down, and there was a bench all along there. You strip right off. You have a pair of running shoes on. What they call a G-string, you know, just a towel, a little string here, and a lamp, that's all you wore. When you went down to the office was thinking about the size, of just under a rock, you know, about a mile on the ground. Okay, he says, you're going, they go by number, them fit holes, you know, face. He says, face is number 1, face is number 20. He says, and you give you your tellies, and tellies, you got your numbers on, so they know how many tons of coal you put out. They tell you, you put 30 tons out, and don't come back here until you do. I said, okay, you can take a day, you can take 2 days, because you never got another meal anyway, until you finish. So we went down and tried to finish our shift. So we went down and that went on and on. 29 tons was the lowest, up to 32 tons one night. I had to drill it, blast, and then 2 or 4 guys had to load it, push it out to the main line so they could take away, bring 2 more cars and load them and take them away again. And that went on until August the 14th. Went down there, and the Japs were in their own language, Tom, the war is over. But they've been in town for a week. Well, this night, we went home, and we asked when the ship was over. It says, the court to the Japanese works, it says, the war is over. Since we haven't got any death from the bodies, still had to continue on work. The night the 15th, we went back again. August the 15th, 11:45, of course. And we went down there, and Jeff says, Sense and I, when this war is over. About 9:30, one guy came over, one of my buddies, you know, says, Fred, says, even out there, there's no job to be seen anywhere. He says, I promise you're going to let's go up to the office and find out what's going on. Went to the office, was nobody in the office. Because not even here, no guards. The guys stay on top. Only place you can come out. The way we come out was a guard room. So we started walking there. We walked the whole mile up. No guards in the guard room. So we went to camp. When we went to camp, there still was no death man. The war was over. Of course, Captain Reed and a few others. But the Japs, it was scarce. And the next morning, they were completely gone. They left there, remained all by herself. But the first night, the first 2 days we slept. We were so tired. We were beat. We never survived another winter. And our bomb never was dropped by the tide. We never should have come out. We'll figure it out. I'll tell you the story. So after the third day, and there was a plane come over. A small plane. It took a web belt with a note. Says, tomorrow, between 9:30 be supply. Dropped it because they knew exactly where we were. And he dropped enough stuff, cigarettes and carry rations, you know, biscuits and so on. But once around the camp, once he went a piece and two biscuits, which that was a big help from rice. Next morning, supposed to be there, we were waiting. I was up right early. I wasn't had to wait long for 6:30, it was coming dropping. And they were dropping. Tons and tons of them. That went on every day. Up to the 27th.
What was the sickness like at this time? Was there even more sickness?
Sickness, it was dysentery. Was the worst part of it then. You know, they start off with diarrhea, and then they have anything in your stomach. And it turned dysentery, and start testing blood. And when the blood was completely gone, it's with the guy. I see a guy going from 180 to about 60 pounds before he dies. Now he goes to about a month. There's a lot of soreness, you know, sores. They report to the MR, which was not a part of a hot for the partition of. So actually, it was the same hot. No medication at all. He saw a few legs in the water and they get all shit and they poke that stuff into the sores. You know, somebody had a hole, she could put a finger in there. They tried to cure him that way, you know. But mostly it was dysentery and soreness. They were dying occasionally. And the Japs, they got a funny way of going about it. You don't feel that you when you're alive, but when that you die, they give you a big bowl of rice at night on top of your coffin. Coffin of four cords at the top. And bun, which we never get, and so on. And they had two guards who had to go on duty. And everybody was volunteering for that duty because soon the Japs guard turns back, they eat it. So the Japanese come back and say, where's the food? Well, the guy says, you must have been awful hungry. You get up and eat it. And they were believers. To go back from the far back, they had a dog. And that dog was fed for 6 months after he died, three times a day. They go there, dump one bowl out, and get another fresh bowl. So they great believer to feed a person. I told where I come from, we generally feed them before they die. After they die, I told them everybody. Before they die. After they die, I told them they didn't require no more food. And we say supplies wasn't limited. We had a lot of food. As a matter of fact, by the 25th, we tried to convince them we didn't require no more food. Not to drop anymore. So we thought we'd tear everything could tear and put right on top of the roof, not to drop any more food. And on the 28th, they come here with a freight train and just got the coal and all. They take us in town 4 miles away. They put us in the passenger train, and every station you come to, they give you be a bunch of people out there with a bucket of water. If you want a drink of water, so they give you, so they had it, yes. And when we arrived in Tokyo. When they arrived in Tokyo, first thing they're done, they give us a good meal. And then we start off with medical examination. First was a shower. And it was so well prepared and neatly done, it was almost unbelievable. You had to be there to believe it. You go in the shower, and one guy has to pass the soap to you. Another guy, you finish it, they give you the towel. Another guy, you got to put undershirt. Another guy, give you undershirt. Another guy, had a pair of pants. Another guy, had a shirt. Another guy, had a tunic. And by the time you get into the first demo, you were full dressed. So, all you got there, they work out all right. And that night there was no place to sleep because everything was destroyed. So they took us by trucks and buses to the harbor. There was a bunch of boats there. So we went to the boat and it says, that's where you're going to sleep tonight. Tomorrow we come pick you up. So we went to this big barrel ship. Took us in there.
Do you remember the name of it?
No, I couldn't think of it right now. So I was just saying we spent the night in there. The guy, I know who was commodore, whoever was in charge of the particular ship, he apologized to us. He couldn't do us any better, but he would do the best he can. He gave us the best combination available in that particular battleship. And the tail, they got about 30 dead men. And divide us in five, group of five. He says, you respond for them five, you respond for them five. He says, wherever you go, make sure they're with you. So So he took us to the east quarters, you know, each one of the other quarters, you know, the part of the crew. And they gave the boys, well, they had trunks and trucks and stuff. Each one of the Navy got 4, 5, 6 years, and they accumulated a lot of stuff. Hats and shirts and undershirts and pants, so you name it. Look, half Navy and half Americans and half Canadians when they come out of there. You know who was who. We stayed there until they give us, show us a movie right on deck that night. And the next morning they come, like I said, they come and pick us up. They fed us dinner, have dinner, they come with a form. If you want to fly home, or go home by boat. Fly on your own risk. After 4 years, 5 years, what's one more risk? So the group who were there, we all signed a form where we went. We went and from there we flew direct to Guam on a C-54. In Guam we were there 7 days. Paid like kings for the Americans. Entertainments, people who were sick, they were taking the stuff to the hut where they want. They were treated. Medical examination from different people, and they had this canteen there, all with butter. Great big store, like in part of a segue. Everything was free, whatever you want, just help yourself. And people couldn't go there. It would be girls with a basket go around the huts and see whether they want a shaving cream or a razor or chocolate bars, whatever they required. Only thing they had to buy was beer. Was 10 cents a tin. And I bought 6 and I was looking at 2 or 4 away because I couldn't drink. And I haven't drank for so many years, so I forgot how. I can put in a beer away. So we stayed there 7 days. They fed us the best steaks and everything like that. And they had the eggnog. Put it. Was great. It was about 6-7 times a day. You go there, try to build the guys up. And we had a guy from Kenora. I know him well. Harrington, big fella. He went to a night to pick up 100 chocolate bars, 50 each box. And the next morning when they went to him for breakfast, he only had some left. You see, 93. From the time we left there until they got him home, he again 57 pounds. That's put on pretty fast. And from there, we stayed 7 days, we flew again, get on the plane, and we got to Hawaii. All the time we end up in the hospitals, the best hospital. And they end up going to the diary room. Oh, you should see them, they're quiet, they're big. Kitchen there, a whole bunch of couple of house men, no trouble at all. Neat, clean. Guys about 6'2", there's cooks. They're big steaks. They gave me one that was bigger than the bill there. So he asked me one other one. I told him I have an awful time carrying this one. So I ate that, and it was all the trips, potatoes, and peas, and you name it. And they give you a bowl of ice cream for dessert, and a bowl of ice cream, and soft ice cream to drink. All the room, pushed it in. Then from there, we flew to San Francisco. And then we, most of the Italians, prisoner of war, worked as a cook in different jobs, both. And I can speak the lingo. So I got in with them for 3 or 4 days ahead of time in my life. But they were prisoners. They finished their shift and they go downtown. So just like a good employee. So, and I was talking to talk to them one morning, I talked to them until 3 o'clock in the morning. So they said, you know, I said, if I wasn't I had a family, I said, I'm never go back. So I never had it so good. I says, I got a family, I gotta go back once this war is over, which is over now. I says, my father wants to solve you. I said, I'm not going to cut. So we stay there another 3 days and met this Bill Moore. He was a fireman in Victoria. He passed away 4 years ago. He was a real chump. We went and started one drive. We had us not to leave the hospital, Mom. We were there on top. We were, every time I says, no, go, we go. That's why I got punished all the time. Went to this nightclub, not right to the, about 3 or 4 miles from the hospital, all downhill. We went there, we had $20 given to us, $10 a piece, American money. We never spent a cent because everything was free. So we went to this nightclub. One, he was half Navy, half America, was all American clothes. So we went there and had a supper, something to drink, and a night show. And then after 4 o'clock in the morning. 4 o'clock in the morning, we asked for the bill. You never believe it. I remember exactly where the amount was, $37.20. We only had $20 in between. And I thought, I'm very sorry. I thought, like, we can afford to pay it. Told me we can pay that, and that's all it wanted to do. Just don't go away, I told him, I just not. A guy came in, and of course, he could, my 6'4", he could have stepped up the roof, big coronation here, my coronation. He said, I understand you guys came here to have a good time. Eat our food, have your drinks, set the floor, show you, entertain yourself, and don't refuse to pay. I told him, it's not about refusal. We just haven't got it. He says, we didn't hear why father came here. Thomas, long story, I'm never sure. This money was given to us by you people, the Americans. We just come out after 4 years prisoner of war out of Hong Kong. And when we left 1941, $10 was still $10. I know I told my $5 a little different. Oh, says you were a prisoner of war. I told him, yes. And he said, oh, he spent another round of drinks. So you're going to be in Honolulu. I hope it's long enough. So it's like 3 days in a way. So I got the bill signed. She said, make sure be my guest tomorrow. Here's my card. She said, I'll be the proper here. I said, hold it. I'll be hired and fired. She says, everyone. And you make some home lunch, you're going to be here. So the next night we went, the bill came over $48. I think it was free, why not? But he just come up there 3 or 4 times a night and I'll go by, oh, are you, how are we doing today? What have we been doing today? And so on. And where's the bill signed? Okay. Third day, I was kind of too short to go. Then we come along again on a volunteer basis. Rather, we want to fly to Vancouver or go by train. Well, the guys were getting tired of plane. Go inside, the majority was by plane. So we come by train from Frisco right to Vancouver. We were there. Couple of days, we were given a uniform. It was the second uniform in 5 years. And we were given $200 allowance because we never got to pay all the money. Was $5 when no money was given to us. We only got to pay once in 4 years. So we come to Winnipeg, and when we were greeted when they come to the CP, there are cars. Oh, it was only 17, I think a group, I think it was about 1,700 cars. So guys take us over. I was there with my sister at the time. We had a little party. We asked the guy to come in, have a drink. He come in. And he says, I'm sorry, I have to go. So I've got to go back to the stage in case somebody else wanted to come. It was very nice. And that was pretty well in the end, the experience. So I myself, personally, I am here to do again for $1 million.
Was there, when you went to Vancouver, did you go to Victoria, or you stayed in Vancouver?
We stayed in Vancouver, Harbor Barracks.
You didn't enter the hospital or anything for any more exams?
No, no examination at all. No examination was given. No one. No examination we had was I told you in Tokyo. But you can't call examination. What I mean, there was no x-ray taking place, no blood test, nothing. And since this, we come home, the boys got prepared to worse. We lost a tremendous lot of people. We down to about less than 400 people. Every day we lost money, we had 3 inside 2 days. Some one year we had 17. A lot of heart disease. Mostly, I would say 80% of that disease. At the age between 48 to 55. Because the average is about 52 years old. Got guys still 48 years old now. They lie by their age, their height, they went to see. No one in life for that, but they lie. And they're still under 50. We have a few guys like 70, 79, 80, they still in the system. But the majority, once you get over the 65, 70, it seems to last a little longer. But to get over between the 48 and the 55, it seems to be there. That particular 7 years. That's where they're going to come most of our condition.
When you got back to Winnipeg, did you go? I guess you went through a medical exam here, did you?
No medical examination. We came here, that we're given 40 days furlough. That's when you had to leave. That's the 40 days furlough. You could go to Prosper to pick up any more money because your money was there. Anytime you want to draw, you could drop to $100 day if you want. So, was to go back there. You extend to leave another 30 days. Another 30 days. You want the March came. I was like, you want to transfer this? I told him, I got a job sometime. I said, I'm going to stay in the army. I told him, I want to discharge. So, yeah, I got discharged, and then this, that's before you did, so you had to have a stop from the army to Antal to buy a suit. Otherwise, nobody would sell you one. Yeah, I end up getting one from Bay, a suit, $35 for the suit 10 days. Well, you pay $135 for the same suit. And then I had no white shirt. Then I end up one day with one shirt from the Bay, over up to CPR and come back the other way. And I finally got a one. Because I knew the guy before the war. And this is it. What do you want? So you remember me? He says, yeah. I've done some work before. Yeah. And I told me, I don't believe this. I thought I've been running around all morning looking for a white shirt. She says, nobody has any. He says, no, it isn't true. She says, everybody has some. But you have to buy a suit before you get a white shirt. Yeah, before you buy it. I says, how many you want? I told him, if I get one, I'm quite sized, but I got just an iron shirt. So he gave it two. He gave it two. He sold it two, by the way. I think that's a pile off for the two. Nevertheless, I got the shirt. And then, well, like I say, I've been a treasurer. I've been a hospital. We got piston. I've been entertainer. I got the entertainments. And I've been a membership for a year. I got the membership chairman. I've been treasurer for the Hong Kong Bretons. I've been treasurer for the convention in 69. I'm still treasurer for 1972. The only reason I've declined last year from treasurer for the organization due to ill health. See, I had two operations last year. I have also heart condition since 69. And I was too much to carry the load, you know, because it takes tremendous amount of work,
you know,
to be able to look after all that, you know. Most of the Cubs, the Hong Vets. Also, I'm shop steward where I work. I work for the Department of National Defense.
Have you worked for them since?
I have worked for the last 26 years. And also, I'm assistant treasurer for them too. So you can see I have last night the list of me. Tonight, you came to Monetti here for me. You see, I'm getting younger. Like I say, I'm 52 years old right now. You had to slow down. I hate slow down because I like meeting people. I like kids. You know, I like to be out.
What is your position with the?
I'm storming.
Storming.
Yes. They treat me very well. They work for the department because I couldn't do it. Was the department because I'm disabled 55%. Actually, that's only 50% left. And they take that into consideration. I'm too tired, I let me slap the tent. So I have no complaints against my employer.
Has your attitude towards the Japanese been changed at all because
of the war? I never against them. I never had. I don't believe the people. I believe the people who started. Like, you work for a company, you have 50 employees, the boss comes along and says, you and you gotta go. Well, you can't believe the other guys. Because them guys fire you, then the employer fire you. So them guys had a job to like we have to do. Kill or be killed. So I haven't got any guys jobs. I never had, never will have. You had to work doing it, so I had to do it. Only thing that, like I said, they overdo it. Because death to them has been a glory for their country. Death to us is, who wants that?